Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today I'm making a hot buttered rum because we have Jimmy Famurewa, brilliant food critic. I've actually always wanted to meet him. Mum's met him before. And he's bringing his mum. We haven't had a mum yet.
We've been really wanting a mum.
So I'm so excited. I really wanted to give her something comforting, warming. I know it is being
quite strong.
And quite strong. I'm making her a little hot buttered rum and it is nice, but it, no, do you know what, it's not as strong as it was. We just had the shot when
it's pretty perky.
Everyone wants a bit of hot buttered rum. So we do measurements, the whole block of butter, and then we added cinnamon, nutmeg, vanilla bean paste, and then, oh my God, like half a block of molasses sugar. And then you heat up the rum, and then you pour the rum and the butter together in a whizzer and just whizzed it up. And now we're just gonna put it back on the heat and just so it's nice and warm, nice and toasty for when they come through.
This is
a lovely autumn drink. It is not Christmas yet, TV.
We've made lamb and prunes, which is a new recipe, isn't it, Deli?
Yes, it is.
It's a brand new recipe for us. So it's lamb sealed off and loads of onions and prunes and tomato and lovely spices. And then it's got a little bit of Derbyshire rum in there. We're going to finish it with Derbyshire rum and butter. Because I like the butter and the rum. These two words are making me happy today, so that's what's happening. And then here, this is an roast onion stock. We're making a roast onion fungi. Fungi is like Caribbean polenta, basically. Like a stiff polenta. And then we're gonna turn it. It's called turning the fungi. Put it in a bowl with a little bit of butter and you throw it around like this. Throw it around. And then you make like a little ball and then you eat that with the prune, lamb prune stew. And then we've got roast cabbage. Well, it's actually pan seared and then just gently sauteed down a bit. It's in the oven now. And then I've made a dressing with really fancy creme fraiche that is just unbelievably delicious. Almond milk, green chilli and some fresh herbs. And then we're going to top that with these macerated red onions and spring onion.
Since I never got my parking, why did I drive? Why didn't we get a taxi?
Are we really
was he annoying?
So
was he
lovely to meet you.
What's your name?
My name is Nikki.
Come in, Nikki.
Come on in, Nikki.
I've written all my names there.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, look.
We got
Nigerians.
Oh my God, stop it. So I've made us something very special, guys.
Amazing.
This is a hot buttered rum.
Wow.
Yes. Just a little.
Don't worry, there's also non-alcohol.
There's also tea. There's
That's
also
so
tea.
Funny. I was like, oh, I know that like you're really into your tinctures and this is going to be some, like, mushroom chai.
I'm happy that my reputation...
This is going
to,
like, really, like, get us going. And it's, like, fully rum.
Well, this is just...
We're going to get loads.
This is cozy, toasty cuddle for us to use. So
amazing.
A little bit
thank you so much.
And, we
can get a taxi, can't we, Mark?
Yeah, you can get a taxi. Yes. It's a cozy, toasty, quite strong.
Amazing.
It's like ginger and
perfect
rum
time of the year.
Butter, spiced butter.
Wow.
Does Jimmy bring
you,
to people's homes for dinner often? Do you get taken out by Jimmy for lunch often?
Yes, he takes me out, but not to homes.
Really. I don't think we've been somewhere else.
No, we haven't been to any home.
It's it's quite unusual. It's probably going to take us a while to acclimatise.
Well, what a beautiful day.
It is a gorgeous day. Thank you for coming.
Oh,
and everyone
so
blue.
Surreal.
Oh, check us out. This happens in our life a lot.
Yeah. Really?
Where the colours coordinate. It's like a sort of synergy thing. I kind of really, really like it.
Very often. I'd love to welcome you to our table.
Thank you so much.
Welcome to the table.
Oh, cheers.
Thank you. A little teacup. So sorry about the giant microphone.
Thank you for bringing your mother.
We're very West London. We're from Ladbroke Grove, Portobello. That's where my mum brought me up. But I've always been really interested in South. I was thinking of moving there last year.
Makita's convinced that there's some really nice guys in South London.
Listen, I think I as somebody who's from South London...
You're going to agree?
I think that's absolutely right.
We're great guys.
What would you say?
I'm not from South London.
She's not from South London.
No, really.
I was born in North London.
I wanted to talk to you about the London that you first came to, what part of London you were first in.
Oh, we were in Northwest, isn't it?
Yeah.
In Asia, Wembley. Yeah. Then I always liked the greenery, so we moved to Chatham.
Chatham, is that quite suburban?
That's in Kent.
In Kent,
right in the deep Kent. So I wonder
if... countryside, wow.
Yeah, there might have been crossover or similarities with Suffolk then.
I got to Suffolk when I was 10.
Right, wow.
So I got to Suffolk in like 73.
Mm.
So that I was there. Oh, I know it was rough.
I don't know, do you ever feel a bit of protectiveness about your upbringing when people... Because I remember I'd say to people... Even like where I went to school, like Bexley Heath and like Southeast London, well, suburban, like suburbia, I'd be like, yeah, I grew up in Bexley Heath. And people would like make this face like, oh my God, you poor thing. Like,
really, yeah.
That my whole childhood was this running battle of, you know, intolerance everywhere and things like that. And it's weird because obviously there's an element of that that's true. But I do feel that, you know, where you grow up is where you grow up, isn't it? And so I feel like an element of protectiveness over. And if you had... You know, it wasn't always black and white.
It wasn't always black and white. It was quite a complicated thing. Mm. And I know that when we first got to Suffolk, we'd just come from Cyprus, because my dad was in the RAF, they actually said to us, do you want to live in London or do you want to live in the countryside? And at the time I was like, you know, 11 or 12, whatever. And my brother was a year older, 18 months older than me. And we're like, we want to stay here because we wanted to ride our bikes and run around.
So it was actually put to use.
Like, it was like a family decision. But then 3 years later we changed our mind. And they were like, too late.
You're stuck here. Remember that choice we made?
Remember that thing
you said?
Can we
walk that back? But this, like, when I was listening to Mum talking there about wanting space.
Yeah.
And I write about it in Settlers in my book, and we had conversations about this when I was writing it, because I wanted to know, why did we move to, like, where we moved to, kind of very white suburbia, like, on the, you know, edge of London. And you talked about the fact that space and having, like, not being kind of... having a bit of a more spacious environment was more important to you than any sense of who the neighbours are. Do you know what I mean?
Like, and was it a more gentle, like, thought of them as children?
Plus his brothers were.
And she was kind of like, you were swimming upstream, weren't you?
My older son was going to school in Canterbury.
That's
and mind you, I only came here when I was like my 40s, I think.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
No, I wasn't. No, yes, I came because they were going to my oldest one was in boarding school, and you have to pick them from boarding school every 2 weeks or so for exit. So eventually we thought, yes, we'll come here. It and I will look after the children and their dad will visit and go back. And then it became like even more difficult to travel. Like it is getting now, you know, the cost, everything.
It's interesting.
Then
isn't
I got
it, you
a
know?
Job at the Commonwealth, which was so good for me. And
the Commonwealth.
Commonwealth Secretariat.
Right. Oh, fancy.
Yes. Wow.
Fancy. Yeah.
So I was traveling and I would leave home very early in Chatham. Then finally we moved to Abbey Wood.
Do you cook, Jimmy?
Mum, do you want to answer that? To
he does.
I
he
do,
does.
Yeah. All my sons cook.
Is he a good cook?
Cook?
Did you teach him?
The land somehow along the way, because I am not for buying food.
I've got to say, one of my abiding childhood memories is her getting to the door, not even breaking stride.
Yes.
Like kicking off her shoes, putting on slippers, and then just walking straight to the kitchen.
Straight into the kitchen.
To like cook.
Cook from scratch.
And there'd sometimes be things that we could heat up, that you'd left, you'd cook at the weekend, this kind of notion of batch cooking that, you know, has now been given a name, but it's of course the way that, it's just the way, we eat.
Yeah.
Mum is I think she's doing herself a disservice. She's such a good cook. She's
such an
innately talented cook. My life is cooking jollof rice for my, kids and then being like, did grandma make this? Or... because I just can't come close.
So,
I just
oh, my God.
No one can... I don't know how she does it.
We're going to have to reverse this and I need to come to you so you can make me some...
Yes, actually, if I had time, I was going to make you a little bowl of jollof rice.
Oh, my God.
She's kidding. Do you know what? I will bet you any money that there's some oil in her food. There's some vegetable oil. There's some Tupperware. There's probably like a base sauce for like some stew or something.
Jimmy, how long have you been married?
Sorry, I've got a little bit of
lamb neck.
Lamb situation.
Should have been a lamb neck situation.
Flossing with a bit of lamb neck. I've been married for 12 years.
Oh, right, okay, long time. Where did you meet your wife?
I was living in Bath. It's kind of quite damning, really, because it's probably the only time I've, moved away from home, really.
Right.
I took it quite lightly, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'll move to Bath for a year. It's not that far away, really.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a couple of hours.
Yeah, and, but I was like, oh, well, I've moved away from, my mum, my family,
everyone I know. And why Bath?
I found it quite... it was just for work. There was a job there at a magazine. Mm. And so I'm in that state of, any kind of social connection I have.
Right.
A friend of mine, a girl that I went to uni with, happened to be on a course in Bristol on the same course as Madeline, my wife.
Right.
We met at a party.
Just clicked.
Yeah, massively just clicked. And I think what it was I wasn't long out of uni. Madeline's a bit older than me. She's 4 years older than me.
God, I need to remember.
Yes.
Which I obviously have a lot of fun with.
My mum and Garfield have that as well.
Yeah. Garfield calls himself my toy boy.
Yeah.
He's 56.
Yeah, look.
I'm 4 years. It's 4 years.
Yeah,
he says, yeah, but we're a different generation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, I do all that, yeah. Your generation. Yeah, I was just a young guy,
a young guy,
ensnared by this older lady.
Exactly, I know the chat, all right? I've heard the chat.
No, but seriously, I think there was something about...
It's the best thing that happened to you.
It massively is. And I think also it's like when you meet someone and it's kind of like the person that they make you become. And it was pretty instant. And I think a lot of people are like, where has this guy come from? Because I think previously I was very yeah, I'm not going to settle down. And, I'm sort of probably quite immature, really.
Right.
And I don't know, she was so beautiful, so together, so, we just really kind of clicked.
Sometimes when you meet the person, it's a kind of anchor, isn't it? You sort of go, oh, right, where have you been?
Sort of
and you kind of know
something.
Yeah.
But I also think what's important to say, because people put a real onus on, oh, it's the person, and oh, we had the spark, and oh, we had that. But I think it's that notion of growing together and also adapting and kind of becoming a new person.
Yeah, long-term relationships, you've got to take all this
massively
on board.
And with children as well and circumstances change. And I think it's not this benign thing that's you meet the person and that's
also,
it, you're
it's,
in.
It's not mythology. It's not mythology. People mythologize. relationships. You know, everything is like that these days. Mm. It's like, oh, and I'm going to meet the one. It's going to be this incredible story. And it's like, you know, I'm not being funny. Someone said to me one day, you know, how long have you been with Garfield? And I was like, 20-something years, whatever it was. Yeah, yeah. And they said, oh, what is it like? That must be amazing. Tell me what it's like. And I said, I just want him to get his own stuff. Stop touching my stuff. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's mine. Stuff. That is my newspaper.
Mine.
That is my cup. Yeah. My own cup. Why have you got my cup?
It's so funny.
Is that what love looks like?
Because it really...
That is what love looks like.
Like, so many... Like, every relationship has these things, doesn't it? And, you know, I always feel when I'm, like, talking about Mantle, like, my relationship, and you know, really proud of it, and we've been together for so long, but I am always like, you know, oh, he's sounding like this great guy, and like Mads is there with like the receipts of like all the things.
Let me tell you a little bit about the truth.
All the annoying, maddening things that I do when I'm like, you know, on my phone looking at my like fantasy football team, and she's like trying to like engage me in something quite important.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
We have this huge family, but we didn't know anything about our ancestry until we did a TV show.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Oh, you did see
it? I watched it.
Oh,
if you read my insight, and I know that's the percentage of Nigerian in you.
Yes. 38%. My Nigerian friends were like, I knew it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, of course she is.
But that was crazy for us to know so much about our family and our Caribbean history and not know anything about our ancestry. You did a podcast where you were talking to people about their ancestry because now I'm obsessed, Jimmy. Yeah. I'm like, where are you from? People are like, well, I'm like, no, but do you know anything else? Yeah. Do you know further back?
Yeah.
And actually, if you try and Google a lot of people, I'm constantly trying to find out Kano's ancestry. I just cannot find it.
You just can't do it.
People just, you don't see it. It's like, he is Jamaican.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know the kind of things you found out from people, like the richness of ancestry.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting part of it because I think for so long, people veiled themselves in certain identities or just said I'm from there and families hide all these secrets and there wasn't necessarily the scrutiny or the interest to like learn like like what is it like you know
but obviously you're Nigerian
and
I remember when I was young African kids would be ashamed to say they're African wanted to be Caribbean
fully in the closet like people I speak to in my book. There's an amazing moment where someone I'm interviewing who's talking about you know being in the closet as a And the hilarious thing was that he was like, I felt like I couldn't quite say pretend I was Jamaican. I had to claim like a different. Maybe Trini or like, you know, he was like, no one's going to, yeah, St. Lucia.
One of those.
It was like, no one's going to believe that I'm Jamaican. But anyway, but then he said that he had this realization. I've got to shout him out because it's Nels Abbey, who's like an amazing writer and author in his own right. And he found out later in life that a lot of the kids who he thought of as his like Jamaican tormentors and they were bullying him for being African and they were like all these like, oh, shut up, I'm Jamaican, were not Jamaican.
No, my God.
And it's like, was anyone Jamaican?
Was anyone actually
quite
Jamaican?
Profound. But yeah, look, that is something that I definitely wrote about in the book. book and it's come up on the podcast. Yeah, and I think we're at a point now where there is this reveling in, oh, wow, where are you actually from? Wow. Oh, do you know your ancestry? And, oh, can you speak the language? Or, oh, this is what we serve. This is what we eat.
Yeah, that's people nuance. Getting closer to it. It's important.
I really, really think that there's so much of that. But,
and the doorway to it is often food.
Yeah, massively.
Isn't it? That's you know, we talked about this when I came on your
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
The doorway to so understanding oneself is so often food.
Yeah, and like,
dishes.
Yeah, the amount of people, you know, Big Zoo, Nadia.
Yeah.
We've had so many people on there now that talk about their own journeys with it.
And
people that have got really interesting stories. Like, I remember Evelyn Mock, who grew up in Scandinavia.
But
is East Asian heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But then her parents, they met in like India. So they were like a diaspora there. And so she's got all these layered like identities. And that's what I loved kind of hearing about from you, because it's like the different influences that you pick up.
And I think, you're saying, you know, there was a point where people just were constantly looking forward.
Mm.
And I think that was about survival.
Yeah.
You know, there was no time to sit down and luxuriate in an idea of heritage and what that might mean as it echoes down through the ages and how we feel it in our bones. We're a very lucky generation to be able to take this time, because I feel like we've got time.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And people
yeah.
didn't necessarily have time.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. And I know this was very prevalent in the Caribbean community, and it was very prevalent in Nigerian communities, that you wanted your children to be able to, you know, to pass essentially. Like, people getting like English names, and like, you know, that came, mum, from a point of like, we understand what you're going to be up against.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But then that, of course, like, there are reverberations in terms of identity.
Well, because it makes you strangers to your parents.
Yeah.
You know, my dad wanted all of that for us, and then he was horrified that he had these English kids.
Yeah.
Who were just like, what? Now, you know, he was like, oh, my God, happening? Why aren't you just
like,
doing... Why are you so disobedient? Yeah. Why are you so rude? Why are you wearing that dress? And where do you think you're going? Do you know what I mean? All of that stuff, it means you then have to kind of renegotiate a kind of meeting with your parents and with your family. Yeah.
But that's a second generation thing.
Mm. Yes, it is. Well, I think it's a first generation migrant thing. Like the first lot of people born in the new place take on this new nationality identity.
Yeah.
And then the people that have brought them are just like, well, what is that?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any sense.
What was it like from your point of view, mum? Like kind of even to this day, it's kind of, you know, you're always ribbing me for using long words that you don't even understand in my articles.
My long Oyinbo words. Like, you brought them up in this country.
Yeah.
And they have no choice other than to behave like.
Yeah.
But there are red lines you cannot cross where I come from.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they were well grounded in that in my home.
Yes.
Of course, you'll always get one that is rebellious.
Yes.
But still, now, coming back, everybody has come to realize that fundamental culture that was imbibed into them is actually making them the better people they are.
Right. Mm. It takes a while, though, because you have to come back round to understand it. I really resented it when I was much younger, you know, because I just wanted to be a little white girl, basically.
Yeah. I think I was lucky in... They lived here, they went to primary school here, they went to secondary. But once you leave that place, you come back home, behave yourself.
Yeah.
Then Esteranze came about, you know, if they hit you, you report them.
Oh, yeah, she threatened me.
If you do that, you're not coming home again.
Yeah.
You're going with them, so choose.
Choose, me or Esther. Makita used to have that Childline number memorized.
No,
she'd go, I'm calling Childline. Please call Childline.
It was very prevalent.
I'm exhausted.
And also, we kept receiving visitors from Nigeria, where they had to show respect, they had to
that's true.
Errands for them. It came to me one day, a friend came and she was sitting upstairs and she wanted tea and tea, so I was calling JJ. Jimmy.
That's what my family called me, JJ.
He was asking, Mom, what's wrong with her? Does she think, you know, we're houseboys here or something? I said, no, she's coming from Nigeria. So I had to go up and tell her, DIY, you do it yourself here.
Yes.
Right.
They are not errand boys. You can't. You call them once, they'll be respectful and I said, okay. So she never called upstairs.
Never called from upstairs again. Did you go to church? Because I always wanted to. She didn't like it. She wasn't interested.
We did, yeah.
Was that very important in your life?
Still, to church. He used to read so brilliantly in church.
Oh, did you? Look at his little face.
Little nod, little proud nod. Yeah. Of course, Mum doesn't know that. I was like, oh, my God. This has been going on for 3 hours. When do we get to go home?
So long.
Oh, no, I love it.
But yeah, I used to sort of play possum or like pretend to still be asleep in bed.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I think we've missed church. I think I've done it. It's too late for us to go. I'd be sort of there like, yes, I think I've got away with it. And Mum's like, you better get yourself dressed. We're running late. Oh, and I'll be like,
And do you still have it? Do you have a church now in Southeast London?
Yes, I still do. Actually, it's the same church like Stephen Lawrence, Mum.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Doreen Lawrence.
And we have a thing of...
Stephen.
Window of Stephen.
Yeah. How beautiful.
But I will say, through writing the book and also doing the podcast, and you learn how vital those connections and communities that often came through religion were or are, continue to be, to like establishing yourself and finding a community. And like Melissa Hemsley was on the podcast and she was talking about her mum who's from Thailand and how... that was the entry point to like find all these people that haven't got anyone and got connection.
Yeah. No, it's important.
It's food. You learn about jobs. You kind of, people are kind of brought to heel. They're looked after. And kind of, so for all my like youthful cynicism, I think I've just gone on such a journey with it. And like, you know.
With faith.
Yeah, massively.
I thought it was interesting because your book is like food, faith, culture.
Yeah.
I thought those are three big headlines there.
Yeah.
And I really like that those are the three that you picked because you could have gone in any kind of direction.
Yeah. Well, look, in the book itself, I delve into other ones that kind of maybe cross over with those core ones. But I thought, to me, you know, faith is so hugely important. If we think about like African diaspora in particular, but then also that story really intersected with the Caribbean community and diaspora. And I read one of the most kind of harmful and memorable stings of like oppression that, you know, post Windrush arrivals faced, was that when they went to church and they expected like a Christian welcome.
Yes.
And they were like, there was no sanctuary from the racism they were facing. And so that's where house meetings started, and that's where like black majority churches start from, really. And
like it's kind of front,
formed in like solidarity because like you're not able to even like, you know,
it's still like that somehow today, you know. So I have in that church where I go, and people ask me, are you going back home? Holidays. This in woman, holidays, yes. I don't know if they still think like that. Mm. They wouldn't think like that now because I'm perhaps even more British than some.
But you still feel, again, that idea of like going home. Like you still don't you don't still think of, do you think of the UK as your home?
No, I still feel like, you know, I was asking myself that same question, where is home? And you can look at it from different perspectives. Home, it could be where you enjoy the best food that you like, the comfort food. For me, my children are here. Even when I go home, I begin to feel like, come on, go back. You know, you don't belong here. But my sense inside of me is always telling me, like, my home, where I feel home. It's Lagos.
Yeah.
It's Lagos.
Lagos.
Yeah. I can be myself.
Home. That's different to home.
Obviously, Lagos and Nigeria mean something to me. And like, you know, I didn't go for years and years.
We've never been.
Yeah.
No, I really wanted to.
But I mean, I wonder what's like for you with like Antigua and going like, you know, back.
This is the crazy thing. We went to do the show and I thought, oh God, I'm going to come back so Antiguan. And then came out going, well, not even bloody Antiguan. It was a real trip for me because I saw my Caribbean heritage as my ancestry. And it's such a short story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
story yeah. that you give yourself.
Short story.
Yeah, and then when you really when it started unfolding, also for me discovering it at the same time as my at the time 58-year-old mother, it was also we were just how have we never asked just this just, one other question of where in Africa are we from?
But because people don't.
No.
But that's what we were just talking about, the luxury of taking time and having to being able to have these conversations.
Being able to think about
these
things.
Realizing also, like I showed my mum, I don't know how you feel about this, Nick, I showed my mum this old Pathé News footage of Antigua, and it was just terrible. You know, the voiceover was just like, these people are so musical. And, you know, it was just awful, patronizing, terrible stuff. And me and Makita were getting really angry watching this thing. She got really, really annoyed. And my mum just shrugged her shoulders and went, that's just how it was.
Yeah.
And I realized that generationally, anger is a luxury. But my mum's generation didn't have time for that stuff. They had work to do. They had kids to bring up. They had stuff to do.
They had to survive.
Their feelings didn't really come into it as far as they were concerned, you know? Definitely. So I think that's really...
I think she sees it a luxury of being
It's the luxury of being able to be angry and express it out. Yeah, the luxury of outrage.
The luxury of outrage.
It's quite a modern thing, isn't it? Outrage.
It is. It is. We even say...
You know, when we had conversations about... throughout the writing of the book and like more generally why certain decisions were made, why we moved to these places, like facing racism, interactions with the police and things like that. And you were, you know, obviously you told us that it was there and it existed, but there was this kind of feeling of like, eyes on the prize.
You're not there with that.
Yeah, exactly. Don't even put your eyes on it.
Yes. But I do think one of the things that really... like writing the book really clarified for me was that you look at it historically and there's the Caribbean community in the UK, in this country, in terms of their story, they were decades ahead in terms of their experience and their treatment, particularly to do with education, things that you're facing with law enforcement, things like that. And so West Africans came, it was almost like the Caribbeans were like, look, we've been here a while. Here's what's happening. And then it was like a lot of the West Africans, some of this...
Go with Jambo.
You know, there was this rift like between the communities. Like they arrived and they were like, we don't want to hear it. We're going to do our own thing. We're going to like focus. And I just think fundamentally what it really pointed out to me was like, oh my God, those groups, if they could have just spoken to each other and engaged with each other, there was so much to learn, I think, on both sides.
And support.
But even now, when we went to camp, Irika. And she has this beautiful place, I can't believe
it. Ngozi. It's called the Ngozi Cultural Centre. It's in Barbados, up in
the south.
Yes. And she was talking, we went and had this beautiful day with them, and we just found out we were Nigerian. So it was quite a day. And she was talking about the fact that even there in Barbados, the Caribbean people, she is shunned for wearing traditional African clothes and for talking about African ancestry. And I think a lot of Caribbean people don't want to think about it because there's a lot of pain.
It's painful.
Because what came in between,
they want to turn away from it,
is so painful.
So painful.
Doc Brown, who was on Where's Home Really, was on the show, amazing, Ben Bailey Smith, and he was talking about... yeah, as you say, that pain and that turmoil and that trauma formed like a new distinct identity that's connected to like African identity. But I think there is something, you know, that impact culturally, like I find that really fascinating. I hadn't really thought about it till he pointed it out, that there's something in that kind of almost bullishness of, no, we're going to like establish our new thing.
Shit,
yeah, we're
going to
create our own thing. And it's got...
But that's what survival does, because survival is about the immediate now. So no matter what it is you're surviving, you don't have time to be thinking about all the frills. Yeah. It's just about the immediate now.
You write, of course, and we're desperate to read Settlers, actually. I was hoping you'd bring a copy.
Oh, God.
I've got one.
That's the gift that I should have brought.
I absolutely love your writing, particularly your critique.
Oh, thank you.
And I wanted to know if you've ever felt any guilt over a review.
Because it's such a powerful thing to
be a restaurant critic.
And it's a strange form of criticism, isn't it? Because they're businesses. Like, you know, I've written about music in the past and TV, and I've done book reviews and film reviews, and it's different somehow because it's... and I think fundamentally, and a lot of other critics talk about this, but like there's those places where it's like, I would never, you sort of almost do want to punch up. Like you want to sort of like the places that
bring the big guys down.
Yeah, the places that are deserving, I think, of the really negative, like, or damning reviews are the ones that are conning people, right? Yes, that right. aren't very good, right. yes. big enough and like broad-shouldered enough to bear it.
Yeah.
If you're like, if somebody's like got some misguided desire to like open a restaurant and it's not great,
yeah.
you just kind of like, I don't know, tell people rather than say broadcasting
yeah,
it and damning
to,
them
with,
yeah.
You don't need to bring them down.
Yeah, right. so I do, I definitely do, which, yeah,
you
know.
Kind of feel the power.
I do,
of it,
and I think that's why it's kind of like important to be sure, to be right, to be like rigorous. Like, I don't know. It's a funny one though, isn't it? Because and post pandemic, it's quite interesting because there was a real onus in the pandemic on positivity and not yes. really doing negative reviews. But then, of course, I think a lot of people read the reviews because of that tension of when you start reading it, you don't know whether it's going to be good
yeah,
or going to be bad.
Just wanna...
And we've all been out and had a terrible experience and you kind of want justice, don't you? You kind of can't be, you're just like, people need to know about yeah. this. You really do. You want to sort of go like vigilante. So I think it's important to keep an element of that truth. Mm. But I don't take it lightly at really all. Lightly. I definitely do try to like just think, is it interesting? And is it worth saying that this place isn't good? Isn't what people think
yes.
it is? Isn't good value?
You think all the restaurants that you do?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah,
do you
much.
Have a job where you never know every day whether you're going to fall in love again?
Yeah. No. And I think that's what's exciting. And I think I almost have to ask myself, like, if something's a bit too much of a foregone conclusion, either way, if I kind of am like, this is just not going to be good. I think that tension's really important, where it's like, it could be great or
yeah,
it could be horrendous.
Every
like,
time you sit down,
if
it's like
too
that.
Much of a foregone conclusion. But yeah,
yeah like, either
like
way,
feel,
like, so you
yeah,
know it's going to be,
yeah,
you don't
know,
need
like,
to do
yeah.
another Michelin
yeah.
star. But
exactly.
I
yeah,
tell
yeah.
my mum, I think as a chef, she's not a restaurant critic or food critic, she's a chef. I tell her that she needs to manage her expectations.
I don't agree.
Because even if we're in the airport,
no.
some bad flight, she'd be like, the beef was slightly overdone. We're on a plane.
No.
I do not. I am not.
Oh, I do love
and
that.
And I'm like, or service
I
stations.
Think I'm probably a little bit like that
right.
sometimes.
I'm, like, that, I'm just like, I don't want to eat it because it's not nice.
But I'm like, look where we are. This is the best it's going to be. Not everything can be hot, buttered, toasted, grilled. She's like, I think they should have just grilled it a bit more.
Yeah, so I'm not a food snob.
No, it's not food snobbery. It's you expect too much.
You asked about me taking my mum to restaurants. I have to go yeah. quite carefully. She'll be going straight into the kitchen to complain.
Yeah, because my grandmother, Nanny, who's upstairs, she doesn't really like restaurants.
No, she's not into it.
And I think it might be her generation when they came here.
As well.
Can you imagine what restaurants were like in England
yeah,
in the
yeah,
70s?
Yeah.
They, you know, a lot
I don't
of
think
old,
many black people
that
went
generation,
out.
Like Garfield's dad, he still calls it outside food. He doesn't eat outside food. He doesn't like it. He will eat pizza in one place in Soho. Or he will have a steak in one other place, and that's your lot.
That's his outside
we've,
food.
He'll eat food if I've cooked it, but he needs to know who's cooked it, where they were when they cooked it.
I've written about this multiple times, but yeah, there's a great irony to the fact that I'm a restaurant critic raised by a woman who is just a little bit suspicious of the entire enterprise. But I get it. Look, seriously, I get it because I think so much about a restaurant, I think culturally, and I realise it when I'm like, oh yeah, mum, we need to go to this place. It's like, oh yeah, you need to be there at this time. It can only be this many people. Yeah. They only have these things. Like, you know, there's such stricture to it that is so in opposition to the way that we eat, the way that we kind of like enjoy
and
food.
What's great about food.
Exactly. Yeah.
We took my mum to Cold Drops Yard. There's a restaurant there. I can't remember what it's called, but they have the little Conroe grills and you grill your own little skewers of
Harry
food.
Am.
That's it.
Harry
took
am.
My mum, not happy. She was like, wait, you've got to cook your own food.
The
they brought it on a thing. And I said, no, it's not supposed to be fun. She was like, what's fun about that? But I wanted to cook my own food. I could stay home and cook my own food.
Like your mum and my mum.
And she looked at the note of the bill and she was like, what? And I stood here and had to cook it myself.
Yeah.
Work the little grill things to make sure the restaurant didn't get smoky. She was like, it's exhausting. Why are people paying money? She just is not into it.
No,
you couldn't understand.
But there's
it.
A lot of that. And I think there is that. I think it's good to have like a healthy amount of cynicism to these things.
Just like, there's so many restaurants. How do you even begin to decide?
I think for the Evening Standard, new places are quite important. But having said that, I like to like throw in a curveball that's not necessarily new, but there's an interesting story. Like last year, I did a fish and chip shop in Holborn.
The poshy one.
The one that's like got the amazing sort of time warp interior.
Yes, and like red light.
Friar's Delight.
Oh, yeah. That place has been there forever.
Iconic. Yeah. And so it was prompted by the fact that fish and chip shops were under real threat because of cost of living crisis and rising oil costs. White fish costs had gone up, like because of the conflict in Ukraine, the war in Ukraine.
Oh, God.
And so I thought, oh, that's a really interesting story. And it was nice. It was a nice vehicle to kind of write about the fish and chip shop kind of thing. And so I like to throw those in the mix. But generally, it's kind of what's exciting, where are people talking
about.
I like to vary it.
Because before we'd even met, I messaged you and I said, I've got to go out next week.
Yeah.
And I don't know where to go. And you sent me a really comprehensive list.
Yeah.
You were like, that one's good. You'll probably like that one. It's a bit outside. You might not want to go there. Yeah. And I was like, that was so kind.
Yeah.
Well, I think also
even know me.
Yeah, the invoice is on the way.
No, I literally was like, I can't believe I just messaged that.
No, but I feel like Jimmy could be like you, where you just that you. Also
I couldn't help myself. I was like, I want her to have a good time because it's Andy. I wouldn't have sent that reply to everyone.
No, absolutely. But also, you probably do just love it.
Yeah,
like
I do.
You're interested.
I do. Yeah. If you're plugged into that world and you kind of know those places, and I think also it's kind of like the way so many of us, if you're into restaurants, you're into food, it's like how we communicate, like, oh, have you been there? Oh, my God, I went there. You've got to try this. I take a lot of people with me that aren't necessarily in the food world and don't know chefs.
That's good to do.
Don't know. And I think that's quite important. So I'm trying to have, like, an approximation of, like, you know, that cynicism about having to cook your own dinner, basically, at a grill for a lot of money is what you need because your readers aren't necessarily connected or in that world. So fundamentally, you're trying to create a version of the experience that readers and future diners will be having. And so if it's like some stilted thing where it's someone you don't really know...
You're not awful.
Yeah.
I got this job for free. If you could just sit and read menus for a job.
But it's still a job. It's still work. It is the kind of work that people think isn't work.
I know,
still really hard work. But a lot of the work we do, people think it's not work.
Yeah,
it's hard work.
Yeah.
They think TV presenting is not really work. They think you just knock it out. It's like, it's really hard work, actually.
Yeah,
and it's a craft. It's a skill. Yeah. You have to know what you're doing.
Where was it you went? You know, somewhere in Asia?
Oh my God! Oh,
in the car
when we drove across Asia,
Nikki, how did you see that?
All our family, family were like, "We can't wait to see this."
We went all around Asia. It was together
was
in a car.
Yes.
We'll never do it again. It was a wonderful experience.
Didn't that in some ways kind of kickstart this new phase of like working together
Absolutely.
On screen and doing
you know
the
what?
Documentary
and in our relationship?
Oh.
Because we had to decide.
Right.
We're in this tiny little car.
And,
you know, it was day two and we were looking at each other and we were really getting on my nerves, right? And we looked at each other and we went, okay,
this
so we're going to do this. We hadn't even left Thailand yet.
Yeah,
we had all of Thailand to do, all of Cambodia and all of Vietnam. Yeah, we were 2 days in. It was like 2 days.
We were just getting breakfast at the airport and she'd complain.
But we were just, exactly. I was just like, oh, what my God.
Okay.
No, the breakfast.
But we just had to decide that we were going to learn how to listen to each other better and be more patient and find a strategy to get through. It was a tiny little car. We were in there for like 12 hours a day.
Amazing.
For like 2 weeks.
And I think it really helped us.
It helped us. And then I think that's maybe why we started working together, because our relationship really just got into
it
a great place.
It was amazing.
That's amazing.
But it was like some sort of weird form of brutal Russian therapy.
I think thinking about when we all get together as a family, sometimes it's the things like driving somewhere, me getting you from the airport, the brothers assembling to help you pack or whatever, like those are the times when you sort of go through the fire of like being a bit like, oh my God, and we're just having a go at her.
I love that, the chaos of
and it's just
but then you come through.
I'm
like,
the only one. I do the cooking, I do the prayer, and I have to pack in such a way like I don't spill the food by the time I get there, and they're all like looking at them, where is she?
So you take food back?
I'll take to whatever occasion it was.
Oh, right. So this isn't going to Lagos.
This is just leaving the house.
Coming to a party.
This is just going to a party,
So you walk with food all the time?
He told you I might have oil in my
oil
car.
In your bag. Yeah. You know what? Somebody once went in my bag and they said, "What is this?" And I said, "What is it?" And there was a courgette and an avocado. Mm. And they said, "What was that?" And I went, "Oh yeah, I was going to make a salad." I forgot. So I've been walking around for about 2 days with a courgette and an avocado in my bag. It was a nice courgette.
But she's,
yellow courgette.
She's always right. That is the maddening thing. As her, like, you know, pesky, annoying, very English sons, speak for myself here, being like, "Mum, this is too much. I told you not to do too much.
No.
Oh, my God, what have you..." And, like, we're unloading the car. Like, the amount of times, like, there's been, like, a party or a kids' party or a function or event.
Same.
There's a knock at the door. I open the door and Mum's not even there. There's just, like...
There's just pots.
There's just pots. It's just the giant pot of jollof.
I'm like, wow,
the jollof walked in. And she's just like beckoning me over to the car. Like, "Go and get this, carry this." I'm like, "There's more, Mum."
But you know,
my point is she's always right.
And you know how much you need to cook for a party. People always think I make too much.
Yeah.
She stopped doing it now, but for her whole life, it's like so embarrassing because I'm always cooking.
Yes. Too much.
Taking chicken. Why do you have to take chicken everywhere?
Embarrassed.
Yes, embarrassed.
And then everybody takes home.
Exactly. And you're like,
and I haven't got anything at home because I've
because
brought
it home. Because
everybody's
got it all.
She's just got a messy kitchen to deal with.
So I'm so pleased that you brought Nikki to our table.
Oh, it's so good to meet you.
Thank you. I was always your fan, honestly. Even before.
Well, I'm your fan now. I can't wait to taste your jollof.
Thank you so much,
guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, I could have this conversation. I've got so much more to talk about.
I know.
Our first mum. She's lovely, Jimmy's mum. And I really enjoyed meeting her. And I just always love seeing Jimmy. I love talking to Jimmy. And what was interesting is I had all these things I wanted to discuss with him about the industry we're both in and all this kind of stuff I'd really, really thought about. Didn't talk about anything.
Mention it.
I just love the way his mind works.
I could have done even more chat with him about some of the ancestral things that we were talking about.
I also particularly enjoyed her talking about when they came home, they needed to behave.
I wouldn't have messed around with Nikki.
No, you don't want to mess around with Nikki. She's absolutely kind and loving and just sweet, and she's got like such a chitchy face. I love a chitchy face.
A chitchy face.
She's a bit chitchy.
And we all wore blue and it felt like we were all sort of in the same water together.
When I meet women like that, you know, she brought three boys up on her own. I brought you up for 10 years on my own and I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit like, these people are like warrior, empress, kind of, you know, trailblazing human dynamos.
Yeah.
You cannot underestimate what that took.
Left her first home, came to this country with three...
In her 40s.
Three young boys and just raised them up and moved around the city and found the right places.
It's a really interesting thought, isn't it, that people from a diaspora never hesitate to move on.
Mm.
They're like, okay, this is what we need now. Let's go get it.
This isn't working anymore. Let's get out.
Let's move. Let's go to the next place until we get it right.
Like me and you, when we left West London and went to East London.
Well, since...
That was a bit...
What an adventure.
What an adventure that was. It bloody was. Changed everything. It did. Thank you, Nikki. Thank you, Jimmy.
Yeah.
I want more mums now.
I want jollof. I'm going around there, you know.
Are you
going
to go around and get Nikki jollof?
I also want to get her to show me how she makes her jollof.
Do you think she'd show
you? Because I got a feeling it's a little magic thing.
Yeah, but exactly. She might want to keep that magic to herself.
No, she just said I could go over. I asked her.
Oh.
Don't worry, I've already arranged it.
All over that shit. Getting a date in the diary.
I've got her number, okay?
It's on.
Okay. All right then, Mum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.